Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollie, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 1250, Dow futures down 117. NASDAQ futures down 41 as Chairman Powell prepares to speak today and then tomorrow in front of the various houses of Congress. Trump was on yesterday, talked about the deal could be very close. He teased this. Could be very close. Could not be close. God, to think that that's a president talking, I can't even go there. But if it didn't happen,
more Powell's going to get a headline today.
Well, I don't think on purpose.
I don't think it's possible since they're going to start the impeachment hearings.
Well, if people start to grill him,
so he gets to operate under the radar this time.
It depends on if people really start to grill him on what's going on with the balance sheet, because they've managed to dodge any sort of explanation for that. And it's way big enough to deserve an explanation, in one man's opinion. And when you start talking about QE2 and QE3 were amazingly publicized, talked about every day, and now he's putting more money in the system than he did during those two, and all we've heard about is, I was a little bit of a problem in the repo market. Come on. You gotta do better than that. In my one man's opinion, but unfortunately, how you drive the news back and forth, Kevin, right now is it, if somebody's keeping track of this, you know, this would actually be a, if he wasn't writing a book about something else, this would be a job for somebody like Eric, who's been in the business, the news business, and what actually, not what people say, but how the subject of the day gets determined. Whereas one day we'll talk about one thing, even though you and I and 50 people from both sides of the divide might say, what are they talking about that for? Here's the more important thing. And all of a sudden, next day, they're talking about the thing maybe we think they should have talked about last week. To me, I have no idea. I mean, how people talk about what they talk about on given days. That's almost as much fun as watching what the news is what comes to the top.
Well, it would be interesting to... I think what you're saying is it would be interesting to chart, you know, actual worthwhile news versus reported news.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and we can't be armchair quarterbacks in the next, or Monday morning quarterbacks in the next day, say what should have been reported the day before. That even you and I wouldn't want to.
Well, no, you could do that. No, I think actually you really could do that. Just as an exercise in building a report card on reporting.
Well, yeah, I think it honestly comes down to, and Mr. Weber and I have talked about this a few times, and it's kind of a, to me, it's sort of a conundrum, is you have greater, quote, access to news, people think, than they've ever had, yet there's less news to get, because there's less people actually provide the news. So it's, I don't know where that leaves you, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't know if there's less or fewer providing news.
I'm talking about fewer providing the original stories and original research.
Yeah, but there's thousands and thousands of online, you know, types.
But I'm saying, but
some of it is more professional than others. Obviously,
I'm talking about the. I'll go to the city. There used to be four newspapers. There probably were how many?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, you know, but there's without the four newspapers, there's 1,000 websites and that replaced it.
I'm talking about original news. If I get one line that I hear in the morning in one place, by the end of the day, I've heard the same line from 40 different places.
Well, yeah, but I think that's part, certainly, if you limit yourself to the, you know, I don't know for a better word, but kind of the mainstream media, then yeah, that's exactly what you're going to get. Mainstream media being the major newspapers, the over-the-air channels, the three or four big cable news channels. Yeah, they're going to, you know, that becomes the echo chamber. But I also think that there's a lot of really good reporting that happens outside of that, and there's a lot of really, really bad reporting that happens outside of that too. You know, it's just a matter of when you find a reasonable source, you have to latch on to it and keep track of it, and you have to always find counterbalance. So you know, if you find an original source, that's good. It could be kind of nice to find an original source left, an original source right, and maybe a few of those. And I think they're out there.
I'm not disagreeing with you. What I'm saying is the stuff, for instance, that I've heard people talk about the CPI for 20 years, Kevin. In the last 7 years, I haven't heard anybody explain pluses and minuses in the CPI. I haven't heard anybody. I heard Larry Kudlow talk yesterday about Chinese paying the tariffs, and now one person afterwards said no. I haven't heard an explanation on any show that I watched for every man as to who exactly pays tariff, what the procedure is, and who, and how. I mean, I'm talking about very rigorous educational news stories. I see none of those, or very few, at least in the subjects that I'm good at. So I can only imagine the subjects I'm not good at, and I read other people's stuff. That's probably half-assed too.
Well, I'm suggesting you find a site like Stratfor.com, where you know they do a lot of in-depth reporting, and they do it on just about any subject you want, and it's done. They work really hard to take out any partisan slant for it, and I, you know, that's a totally legit news.
But those are
news source. It's a subscription service, but it's a well worthwhile subscription.
We're on spots where you have to be a Kevin O'Neill or to a certain extent me. You have to find them. What I'm saying is, when you had four papers in Chicago at a city desk, just the average bloke, to use a British term, reading the paper got better stuff than he's getting now. Just the average guy. You're right. I'm sure you're right that if I dug, or if I do what Kathy does and read the London Times every day and the Financial Times and what's the other London one, or if I read Al Jazeera every day, could I get it? Yeah. But I'm saying now there's much more of an effort. Everything's because the stuff is so available in front of you, the stuff that comes right at you the first time is somehow legit. And that's my own point, is the stuff you're getting every day is crap in my mind. Right? But the stuff that you see first, go to Yahoo News, go to, you know, Google News, go to whatever. I mean, I don't know, I'm never going to win this argument, but you know where I'm coming from.
Darn right, because I'm not going to let you.
Well, but yeah, you're right.
I'm too stubborn. I'm more stubborn than you are.
Well, but you'll say, yeah, if you work your ass off and you find, you know, some research place where the guys do good work. But I'm saying regular people don't do that.
Once you find them, you can stick with them.
That's
my point, is that they're out there. You do a little bit of the legwork to find them, and then you stick with them, because once you find them, it doesn't take extra work. It's just as easy to go there as it is to ChicagoTribune.com.
I don't know why I'm being in so much trouble with this. What I'm saying is, we had a teacher strike for 11 days. I listened to Channel 9. I listened to Channel 7 once in a while. Not once did somebody have a 5-minute expose on teachers' salaries, teachers' education, how much schools get per student over the last 20 years versus people's income versus taxation. Not one. And you would think that would be the number one subject, Kevin. Not one person had those numbers that I saw.
Yeah, well, I think that's a shame. And in that regard, you are absolutely right that you're not getting the kind of reporting you need.
And that's my whole point. I'm not saying that I dug in last week and found a number.
But is there something smaller in Chicago that's not going to be right out front and center that would have that kind of information?
Well, I guess everybody in the city.
And I don't know the answer to that in that specific case.
All right, everybody in the city has heard the term TIF. Name me one person, if you're not on the show with Brendan, or to a certain extent John Flanagan, has any idea what the frig a TIF is and whose money is it. And people toss that. And you would think that in the last 25 years that somebody somewhere on a radio or TV would say, here's a TIF, how it works, who pays for it, who gets a break. Not once. And it's everybody's dough. Kevin, we talk about it every day, for God's sake. The word TIF is on one of the news shows. Nobody has a definition of it. I think that's unconscionable, to be honest with you. Now, could you or I dig into the bowels of the internet and come up tomorrow with a report on TIFs? Yes. But I'm saying the people who use the term don't even know what they're talking about, what it even means. I'm just saying it's a little weird, isn't it? To me, it is.
Well, yeah, because if they're going to report something that relies on TIF financing, they should take a moment to explain what it is. Okay, that would be good writing.
But I have a question for you and Mr. Van Weber, my two sports mavens. What is going on down in Memphis with this kid that was declared ineligible, and then he went to court and he thumbed his nose at the NCAA and took the risk that if he is ineligible, do you have any idea what that story is all about?
Oh, I haven't been following it closely, and maybe Matt has, but it seems to me that Penny Hardaway loaned some money to a guy, which he had to know was against the rules, and that even if the guy's paying it back, they're making him ineligible. I can dig into it a little bit, and we can talk about it.
I think it had something to do with it just before he
was
coached.
It's kind of this stream of stupidity that comes with NCAA sports, and I've become very jaded about that. I don't care anymore.
Well, the situation, I believe, the kid is from another part of the country, and he was evidently, I don't know if he was a LeBron James in high school, but he was, let's just say, he stood out a little bit.
He was like a number one recruit, though.
Yeah, and he stood out early, not just his senior year. I mean, I think people knew him. And didn't Penny Hardaway give his parents the moving money to Memphis, and he finished his high school in Memphis? And
something like that, yeah.
Then he moved right in, and Hardaway at the time was just a graduate. So I guess if you're a graduate, you're considered a supporter, right? Now he's a coach.
Considered a representative of the university.
You know what? I tell you what, that seriously blows. I don't consider myself a representative of Notre Dame. If I gave a kid...
Don't talk to the recruits, Tom.
You know what?
For God's sake, don't give them money.
Well, if I gave a kid a job, it wouldn't be because he was playing football there.
A little more background is Hardaway paid... It looks like $11,500 to the kid's family so he could move to where they moved. And it just so happens they moved to the high school that Penny Hardaway was coaching and the AAU team that Penny Hardaway was coaching at the time. And then when Penny Hardaway got the Memphis job, then he was able to land this recruit who was the number one recruit in the country.
But he had no idea he was going to get the Memphis job at the time, I don't think, did he?
Well, I don't think he knew for sure, but I think he knew he was going to put his name in the running and hoped he would.
I guess my question is, and I don't know if you guys can answer the question, is it, quote, legal for the high school coach to also be the AAU coach? Double dip like that?
That I don't know.
Yeah, I have not seen that before, so I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah,
maybe Lil Penny was the AAU coach.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that.
Everybody remember Lil Penny?
Yeah.
The University of Memphis president says, we support James's right to challenge the NCAA ruling on this matter. The University of Memphis has high standards of ethical conduct for all faculty, staff, and students, and we take seriously any allegations or conduct that is not aligned with our mission.
So they're saying that he gave the kid money to move to his high school.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Oh, yeah. It was before he came to Memphis. Now, you could say, would that guy have ever wound up at Memphis if not for all the prior dealings? And the answer to that would be, I seriously doubt it.
Well, is that illegal for the high school? If I'm got a good team at Morgan Park.
I have to know the state of Tennessee rules, but I suspect yes.
I mean, you're
not supposed to recruit people into your district. Of course, if they were moving anyway, one of the parents was moving to Memphis for a job, maybe working for FedEx or something like that, and so they were going to move anyway, could Hardaway have suggested that they move into his district? I suppose, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know the state of Tennessee. Every state's going to have its own rules for how recruiting works, but you're really not supposed.
They always recruited.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
No, I'm saying
that's what he just said.
But they would recruit academically. They would say, you know, you can get somebody from anywhere. But they were going out of their way to recruit athletes.
Way back in the day, maybe there's more to my outburst here than may be obvious. Is it? There was a time where the Chicago Catholic League was not part of the IHSA. And the reason why is they actually gave scholarships. So in my day, Marist never played St. Rita. They never played Brother Rice because Brother Rice and St. Rita gave scholarships and Marist didn't. So Marist was in the same league as St. Viator as, I don't know, where were you guys? Kevin, you guys were in a scholarship.
We were in the Chicago Catholic League.
So you were scholarship givers.
We were not part of the IHSA. There was not a state playoff at the time anyway, so it didn't matter much. The big game for the Catholic League schools and the public league schools was the Prep Bowl.
Right. And there was no way on earth, Maddie, that a real good Marist team in the IHSA would ever match up with a team from St. Rita or Mount Carmel. Because those kids were all scholarship players. And then all of a sudden, when they had the state playoff, the Catholic schools finally came around to the rest of the rules, right, Kevin, or something like that?
Yeah, once there was a state playoff, then the Catholic League wanted to be part of it, so they signed up.
But I remember we had I was not one of the starters, but our grammar school team just so happened that my seventh grade year, the eighth grade team, I was there, like I said, I was a sub, but the eighth grade team was about as good as you can get. We were undefeated, we beat everybody. And I'm going to say three, four of those kids went on to play college ball, maybe five. And the coach from Mendel came out one night at practice, and he said that whole first string, any of you guys want a scholarship to Mendel, you're in. And let's just say Marist didn't do that, and neither did St. Viator or anybody like that. Rich White started 3 years at Mendel, and Jerry Schumacher played at Michigan under Bo Schembechler. We had some guys, and a couple of the ends ran cross country in college and ran track. So we had some guys. I was not one of them, but we had some guys. And those guys, you and that Mendel team, Marist could never have played them, and walked away with their head hanging up at all. But
you know what? When you were seniors, Loyola beat that Mendel team twice.
Well, but you guys were in the same. You could get scholarships. You're in a Catholic league.
Yeah, not a whole team's worth, though.
No, but they. But I mean, the real powerhouse is when my cousin was at St. Rita in '63, when St. Rita would actually pack the Catholic League game was huge. They one of the Prep Bowls, didn't they have like 80,000 people on them, Kevin, or 100 or something?
Oh yeah, I remember being there, and it was still 50,000.
Yeah. But back in the early 60s, in the mid-60s, I mean, the people that are playing in these games are household names. I mean, Butkus, Johnny Latner, those guys are all playing in a Prep Bowl. I mean, the history of, like, the Prep Bowl MVPs, how many of those guys were college stars, Kevin? I mean,
well, and as you went on, you know, in our era, you had, Dennis Lick would probably be the most recognizable name in Chicago because he was a long-time starter for the Bears, a first-round draft pick, and probably a 10-year starter for them. They had Billy Merrick was a big star at St. Rita,
yeah.
And for a while he held the record when he was at Wisconsin for 200 consecutive 200-yard games. He had the college record.
Who was the kid?
Broken later by Billy Sims.
Who was the kid from St. Rita that was like had to be one of the Irish's biggest recruits, and he had that. Maddie, what didn't the same thing happen to Wayman?
Oh,
Bryant?
That was later. Foley, John Foley.
Yeah, the same thing happened to him as happened to Wayman Bryant and Muckenstern, where you get that hit right above the shoulder pads, and it catches the nerve going from the neck to the shoulder, and your whole shoulder like deadens, and it ends up half the size of the other one or whatever. There's like three or four people that I know that have had that injury. Didn't the kid from St. Rita had that injury, right, Kevin?
Yeah, similar. Yeah, I don't know the specifics of the injury, but I knew it was career-ending.
Like we were talking about sophomore year in college, man. One hit, and he was out. And it wasn't a knee. It was pretty bizarre. You know, I think the shoulder pads are the point now where they're better than that or whatever or something, or maybe people don't hit the same way. But anyway. But
well, all the equipment is because it's lighter, it's more form-fit, it's and more durable, and still more durable. Yeah, I mean, the technology and equipment is incredible. and
which certainly weighs a lot.
You're seeing it now in helmets. It's not making concussions go away, but for many types of helmets now, they're making it the instance of concussion much lower.
Well, and, the helmet.
You can pull up the video for like the Visus 01 helmet. These things are soft shell. You know, the helmet gives now, so that it has built in so that it absorbs the shock. Because when you get a concussion, the helmet style wise has kept you from breaking your skull historically, but it can't prevent concussions because concussions happen when your brain kind of gets moved inside your head when it
right.
takes a blow.
Well, the helmet was designed so you didn't get cut. Right, and you didn't get a fractured skull. Right, and the old helmets, they know nothing about concussions. But there were some in my high school, man, where the helmet was a suspension of I'll use the term rope, but you had straps in there, and your head sat in this rope thing around your head or strap thing around your head, and it was tied to the sides of the helmet. There was like no pads except by the ears. The idea being it was like a suspension helmet. Your head couldn't hit the side of the helmet, right? You ever see one of those coming?
Yep, I remember them.
And then they had some that were all padded up. There are all kinds of different styles in those days, but then none of them was really designed to stop your brain from whacking the inside of your head, basically, is what you just said, Kevin. But there's been huge changes. But every change, though, every time you drop the weight, people just move faster. You know, it's like cars. You know, when cars were deadly in a crash at 30, they fixed that, and all of a sudden people drive 50. And now pretty much with all the airbags and stuff, you can whack into something probably close to 50, but everybody drives 90. So you don't never really get anywhere, do you? In some ways.
Well, it's just different.
It's just different. It's just different.
So you're not getting anywhere, but you sure are getting there fast.
What is the... I know I'm kind of switching around, but I had a bunch of stuff that I'm driving in this morning to talk to you about. We haven't talked about it in a couple of minutes here, but what is the state of the... Every year they seem to decline watching them. What is there been any change or any dropping of any of the smaller bulls, or are they still all there?
I don't think they've... I don't think that at least the number hasn't dropped, but the attendance is really low. There are very few games that aren't playoff games that draw anything any significant numbers. But I do think that what they have going for them is that the production costs can be very, very cheap. So, they're almost all on ESPN, and it fills time at what otherwise would be a pretty dead time of the year. But you do notice now that the conferences are expanding their basketball schedules, and we've already seen some conference games in November, but there are more scheduled in December now. So they're trying to put some meaningful basketball on during that time period, and I think that's going to be part of the equation here. What that'll do is that will give us less need to have the Camping World Bowl on a Thursday night when we can put on a couple of good conference basketball games.
Well, didn't Pete Manny? We're going to break here. Didn't Pete do a couple of games and for the lesser bowls last year? And he never even went to the bowl. They just did it from the studio.
Right, they do them from the studio. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know if that was last year or a couple years ago, but yeah, he did.
Yep.
Wow, SP Futures down 12.50.
Hey, before you cut away to commercial, if I'm not here when you get back, I'm rebooting my. Router, so I will call back in as soon as that's done.
Yeah, make sure you reboot that router, will you?
Well, I want to make sure I have internet access so that I can look things up while we talk.
All right, you mean I skip around so much that I can't stay on the same subject? Is that what you're telling me?
That's pretty much it, but yeah.
Right. SP Futures down 12, Dow Futures down 114, NASDAQ Futures down 39. Jay Powell speaks today. We'll have more stuff when we get back from break.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Mel over the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill rebooting. Hopefully he succeeds at that. SP Futures down 11. NASDAQ Futures down 36. I guess this is just in front of Powell's testimony. I don't see any really horrible news today of any kind. Dow futures down 123. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 98.7%. FTSE down 35.5. CAC around down 25.4. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 200. That's 0.8%. Shanghai down 9, so 0.3%, so not much there. Hang Seng, however, down another 493. These guys have been whacked ever since the last weekend when they had the issues with the guns coming out in Hong Kong. Now 1.8%. Bonds, 1.87, so they're down a little bit. The rates are down a little bit. One same way. They're back down to minus 0.29. Japan, however, still minus 0.04. making a threat to come positive here one of these days. Gold's up 1260, 1466. Silver up 24 cents, 1693. Biggest bounce we've seen there in a while. Copper continues to go down, 2.64. Again, there's a lot of people who look at the price of copper as part of a health kind of test for China. So if that's what you're looking at, you're not seeing much help. Oil down 37 cents, 56.43. Brent down 61 cents, 61.45. The other thing that some people used to look at in China was the amount of electricity they use and all kinds of things like that that would kind of indicate economic activity because they don't trust the numbers. So anyway, we'll keep talking about that as time goes by because some people still look at that. RBOB 160, natural gas 259. Maybe we got for us. That's still cheap for natural gas considering how freaking cold it is outside. Maddie, how cold is it outside?
It's very cold. We'll get to that in a second. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start, though, on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Should be relatively dry out there. Certainly when you get on the expressways, it's dry, and that's leading to good travel times. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Traffic building on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but looking good otherwise. Southside expressways are looking good. Off the expressways, it looks like 35th Street between South Francisco and South California is closed due to a serious fire. The fire at 3517 South Francisco has been struck out. Crews are staging for cleanup to an earlier building fire at 35th in California that took place overnight, but that has 35th closed on the south side, so keep that in mind. Southwestern suburbs, we have a crash at Lamont Road and Woodcrest Drive. And then in the northern suburbs, Gilmer Road westbound at Owens, there was an accident. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, another cold, well below normal day, but a little bit better than yesterday. We'll reach a high of 30, still below freezing, but 10 degrees warmer than yesterday. Overcast skies, however. Yesterday we at least had sunshine. Today it's partly cloudy and 15 going up to an overcast high of 30. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 80 today. Right now it's clear and 57. In sports, the Bulls blew out the Knicks last night in the fourth quarter, pulling away to a 120-102 home win. Kobe White was the story. The rookie broke a franchise record, hitting 7 3-pointers in the fourth quarter alone. He had 26 points and 7 assists. Actually, 27 points and 6 assists in the Bulls win. Suns lost at home to the Lakers, 123-115. Blackhawks were off. They'll look to get their first ever win against the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. In Las Vegas, that's a 9 p.m. Chicago time.
So what are they against an expansion team, like 0-10?
Like 0-7 or something like that, yeah. Coyotes topped the Blues 3-2. College hoops, Notre Dame had no issue with Howard. 79-50 was the final in that one. Loyola is now 1-2. They're off to a very slow start. They lost at home last night to Coppin State, 76-72. Chief.
I'm just looking, reading this headline here. All I'm going to do is read it. I'll try not to comment. Trump rails on Fed, notes other countries have negative rates. Give me some of that money.
You know, it's funny because he keeps talking about America going its own way, and now when it suits him, he's perfectly willing to say, "Well, let's go their way."
The man has zero knowledge of how this works, Kevin. There's no whatever. The person who's getting,
well, don't rule out the possibility it does have knowledge, and you know what's said for public consumption isn't necessarily what he thinks or knows.
Well, negative rates would be good for his real estate empire. It would be good for his massive deficit that he was going to close. It's bad for everybody else. But if you look in the mirror and all you see in the mirror is yourself, your own fat head, then I guess you have a different view of the world. Just saying. If you're that egocentric, if it's good for me, it must be good for everybody else. I guess we just never learned. We never quite got that lesson, Kevin. We should have early. I think we'd have been happier. It's good for me. Well, trust me, it's better for everybody else.
Okay. Well, I'm a happy guy anyway. It doesn't matter to me.
Well, you'd be happier. You'd be rich. You know.
Well, that's true. But you know, money can't buy you love.
True.
You know, I heard the song.
Yeah, it was a song, right?
That's right. We played it on the show. Can't Buy Me Love.
Yeah. Just saying. But then,
before you get away from the basketball scores, you see that Kentucky lost to Evansville at home.
Oh, yeah. I heard on the way home last night that they were losing. I never dreamed they would actually lose.
And not only the twist to that is the coach of Evansville is Kentucky's own Walter McCarty.
who was a great player at Kentucky.
I remember him. Yep.
Who played in the NBA for 10 or 12 years, and he's now the coach at Evansville. I'm not sure, you know, why or how he got that job, but went into his alma mater and beat him.
He was he worked for Brad Stevens on the Celtics staff, so you know, that was like 4 or 5 seasons. So he had some, you know, some obviously an inclination to be in coaching and some experience.
At what level was Evansville? I know Jerry Sloan played there, and obviously he was a hell of a player. Wasn't he supposed to go down and have a coaching interview or something the night the plane went down and everybody got killed? I guess my question, before the team had that horrendous luck and lost, like, the program, the coaching staff and the players, I mean, how high were they? Were they like a Butler? I mean, in that sort of same league?
Butler back in the days of the Midwest. Horizon League.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea what league, when Evanston was at
its
peak.
Well, Butler's in the Big East now.
Right, but where did when Jerry Sloan was there and they had a good team, which a long, long time ago, where were they? Were they a second tier? I mean, when I say not.
Yeah, they were kind of a second tier. They were known. I don't remember what conference they're in. They're in the Missouri Valley now, but I don't remember what they did back then. Might have even been an independent because there were a lot of those. But there also weren't 350 Division I teams. So it's hard to say where teams fall in the pantheon historically.
Right.
And to make that relevant to, you know, what it looks like today.
That's true. Because, I mean, even like, you know, like Chet Walker went to Bradley, they were a good team for a while. I mean, it seemed like all these schools sort of had their day. And Bob Lanier went to St. Bonaventure, right? I mean, there were a lot of teams that were pretty good for a while because they got a couple of players. I mean, I don't know if Jerry Sloan was a college star, but I think he was.
Yeah, he was a really good player in college.
Well, he's a really good player as a coach. I mean, as a pro and a good coach.
And he was a hell of a player as a pro.
Yeah.
He was known. You know, he was a known commodity. And you're right. I mean, you could – there were schools like Bradley, like St. Louis University, places like that, that had some really good teams and really good players. But again, there weren't so many of the alternative schools, and you know, other than UCLA, there weren't a lot of teams that were able to just completely hoard talent too. UCLA would have, you know, not just a roster full of players, but a roster full of stars.
Well, the guys who played behind the centers, didn't the two centers that played behind, at the time, Lew Alcindor and the other dude, Dave, the redhead guy, that was his name, I'm all crazy.
Bill Walton?
Bill Walton. Weren't the two centers that played behind those guys both number one draft picks or something? I don't think
they had. I remember names like Sven Nader.
Yeah, it wasn't Sven Nader.
Ralph Drollinger.
Yeah. Sven Nader was the number one pick, wasn't he? Or at least his round two.
I don't know if he was number one, but he was a high pick.
Yeah, he was a high pick. I mean, because everybody's like, yeah, man, it wasn't for, you know, Alcindor, Sven Nader would have been, you know, whatever.
And you just don't see that today. No. Today, instead, you're going to see if he's got to play behind Bill Walton, he's not going to play there.
Right.
Or you'll see coaches just trying to figure out ways to use both of them.
Well, you also had that happen when people couldn't play as freshmen. You couldn't play anywhere. So you weren't the thought of you starting as a freshman, you couldn't start any place. So it was a little different of a dynamic. Right? I mean,
yep.
That's true, but why would you go somewhere with a guy such a highly touted guy ahead of you? Why would you want to go there?
Well, plus they never got drafted early, which is even worse.
Yeah. Like that, you're going to be playing behind him whether you can play as a freshman or not. You're going to be playing behind him for at least 2 years probably if you come in a year after him. And I mean, I'd just go somewhere else.
I think that they would lie to you.
Well, they would, but there were also, there weren't as many programs in general. There weren't as many high-powered programs. People wanted to play for John Wooden. People wanted to play at UCLA because they knew that they were likely to win a championship. And for about however many years in a row that they won them, they were right.
Yeah, they were like, I mean, it wasn't basketball every night, man. The basketball games were part of Wide World of Sports, and mean, the Irish were only on when they played UCLA or Indiana or somebody like that. I mean,
well, they tapped into TVS Sports, which was Eddie Einhorn's big deal, and into syndication, and you know that was sort of the early 70s when Notre Dame would be on every Sunday practically with a game, and it became the Notre Dame game of the week because nobody else was on national TV.
But literally,
we didn't have ESPN yet, and yeah. The sports broadcast networks had other alternatives.
Well, that's why the only game that was nationally televised when we were in school, Kevin, was the one on Saturday afternoon. You know, all those the games at UCLA, and those were all Saturday afternoon, right?
They were generally playing in the evening too. It was Thursday, Saturday, but
right.
You didn't get a lot of Saturday afternoons. It that all changed in the early 70s. So
I'm going to say mid 70s.
You know, when we were younger, that's when it was starting to change.
It hadn't changed by the time I graduated.
Basketball is everywhere.
Right, it had not changed by the time I graduated, because my senior year was when they beat UCLA, and that was a Saturday. I'm saying the Irish were on maybe three times that whole year. Who else did it other than Channel 7, Wide World of Sports? I mean,
that was sort of the genius of Digger Phelps in that, he tapped into that void and scheduled himself accordingly. So there were, he always had big games available for consumption by the networks, and so when Al McGuire and Billy Packer started to become a thing, they were right there. Notre Dame was right there to say, "Here, we'll give you a marquee game," because the conferences, they hadn't figured out how to put all their I'm working on my speech therapy today. They hadn't figured out that they need to line up their conference schedule. So you've got Indiana against Northwestern
right.
on a weekend, and nobody wanted to show that.
But it was, if you wanted to be in, I guess what I'm saying is, you asked the question, Matty, why would somebody go to an Indiana when it was loaded with people? It's because Indiana probably was on TV, seven times a year, and if you went to somewhere else, if you went to Iowa, you probably weren't, basically.
That makes sense, yeah.
Those guys had one of the guys I used to play ball with on the south side was, I went to Indiana, and he couldn't stand Bobby Knight. He quit. He goes, if you were going to be a pro, and you thought that was going to be your livelihood, you put up with that crap. He says, other than that, running sprints to where everybody had their own bucket to puke in, and he goes, I love to play basketball. I don't want that. What do I need that for? Every practice is torture. He's like, I guess if I was going to make my living at it, I'd put up with it, but I'm not going to. I just want to enjoy playing basketball. I don't mind being coached and being told what to do. I understand that's part of the deal, but this guy's over the top. Remember when the movie Kevin Junction Boys with all the guys from A&M?
Yep.
And the best comment ever was when the guys came back, and there was only how many guys went, and only 14 came back, and Bear Bryant had this team. And I remember the guy from one of the people was from Jack Pardee. I always thought Jack Pardee was one of the most intelligent, nicest coaches. Just when he came across on TV, he came to the Bears. He made the playoffs in his second year, then he quit. He couldn't stand the Bear organization. And he was kind of a straight guy, but he was one of the Junction Boys. And after the movie came out, this reporter says to him, Coach, you're one of those guys. Weren't you proud of the fact that you made it through that thing and you came back like real tough and you won all these games and stuff? And he goes, no, it sucked. He goes, the only reason why I stayed there is because my parents got up and left and divorced. I had nowhere else to go. Right? And I'd quit that in its third day. That's what he said. Because it was ridiculous. So there goes the legend, right, Manny? Kevin, I'm going to turn a little bit of the subject here. It's all sort of the same thing. It's kind of how things change and believability. I keep looking at, as I get note after note mostly from the right, the guys from the left aren't as good at sending stuff out as the guys from the right, at least the guys listening to the show. I understand I got, as Duke Chapman, you say, I got water on both shoulders here. On the one hand, I'm becoming much more conspiratorial on myself. And I just ran and raved about not being able to believe Larry Kudlow. I never thought I could believe even it was on TV, but that's another story. As this impeachment thing goes along, every single person who's coming up as a witness, or whoever the people are in the Democrats on the committee, or Republicans somewhere, everybody is absolutely convinced that if somebody doesn't agree with you politically, you can't believe a word they say. Now, I'm still somewhat in the camp that there's a process here, and even if you see a car accident and the guy who's standing on the sidewalk is either a right winger and you're left or a left winger and you're right, you might want to ask him what he saw and assume that the guy's not going to lie to you or lady. Am I wrong here that if the person finds out you're on the opposite side of the aisle, he's gonna tell you the car came from the other direction? Or, I mean, they just vilify people that haven't opened their mouth yet. I mean, the potential.
I think we're at the point where we're asking what people's motivations are regularly. So it's partly what you believe, but I think that's that in the political world, a lot of that has been earned.
Oh, I agree.
We definitely have documented enough hypocrisy on both sides where, you know, last time we did this, whatever this may be, you know, here's what we had to say, and now, you know, now we're singing a completely different tune. So I think we have definitely earned that, that skepticism, but, you know, that is the real question behind it. Is, are you saying this because you believe it, or are you saying it because you know, because you're against the you know, the target of your commentary?
Or you know, why if you know it's a lie, you would never. I mean, I don't think that half of these people, when I talk about Larry Kudlow, I mean, everybody likes the guy, John, and the rest of the people, so I have to assume he's a decent sort. I'm hoping I could believe that if I played golf with the guy, you know, he wouldn't tell me he got a 5 when he got an 8. I mean, he probably wouldn't. Because a person to person, people, a lot of times people don't lie, but they get lost in this mix. And I'm not, he's convinced, I mean, I know he knows that the Chinese are not paying the tariffs. Yet I will tell you that, you know, it's not like I'm one-sided on this. When the Obamacare was 9 miles down the road, I'm sure you could still get Joe Biden or Valerie Jarrett or somebody to say, oh no, you can still keep your own insurance. When it was obvious to all concerned that your own insurance got canceled next year, isn't everybody else's? I mean, yet it's still, at some point, when is it, I guess, your personal responsibility to just bail out of the party line, just say, look, if that's what you want me to say, send somebody else down to the liar in the driveway spot. You know, it's not going to be me today. But I don't know where, when it's your job, I mean, at some point, is somebody on Boeing going to say, we don't know if this plane's any good or not? I mean, at some point, when do you stop being the liar in the driveway? I mean, personally, on a personal level, you, no matter what my job was there, you couldn't get me to walk on national TV and say, man, these tariffs are being paid by Chinese when I know damn well they're not. I mean, I don't know where, obviously people have different spots when their own morality is like that. As a matter of fact, I was talking to a couple of people who were real Trump supporters a few weeks ago, at a place that was somebody who's very dear to me, which is even more bizarre. But I said, I'm not asking you to not like the guy. I'm not asking you to do anything. It's your opinion. It's not mine. So all I'm saying is that he's kind of an outlier, and that him or anybody else, if you like their policies, you like something, you're willing to take a little bit of something, okay, and bad behavior or whatever it is, for what you think is a greater good. Everybody does that. I mean, maybe the general you don't like, but you think he's the best chance of getting your kid home. I said, but everybody has to have a line someplace, somewhere, to where you say, there's 330 million people in this country, we can get a better guy in that spot. Now, maybe for you, it hasn't happened yet. For some people, it has. For some people, maybe it'll never happen. For other people, maybe it happened way too quickly. They never even gave the guy a chance. I get all that, but everybody has to have something that says, nah. I mean, I listened to Leon Cooperman the other day, and he goes, I don't think the man should run again unless he can basically shut it up and not keep calling every political opponent Little Mike or this guy that or sweaty palm this guy or small appendage that guy. He goes, this is not what anybody wants. I mean, now, there's Leanne Cooperman's line in the sand, right? I'm not asking you, or I'll never ask you where, but I'm saying somebody somewhere has to have there has to be a spot for her, no matter who it is. But even, there's even something Caesar could do where you say, hey, Julius, get the hell out of there, will you? I mean, am I right or wrong? There has to be a spot where you can't tell that lie. And it seems to me that this is all over. Some people have lines that I don't know where they got the lines.
Well, what I believe part of the problem is at the moment with the current president, there's a lot of people who don't like him. And I remember sending you an article a while back. It was called "We Can't Spare This Man; He Fights," and it was about Grant, General Grant, who eventually became the president, and how nobody liked him, but he was the only guy, the only general who was really willing to take the fight for Lincoln, to carry the fight for Lincoln. And so Lincoln said, "We can't spare this man; he fights." Everybody wanted to get rid of him. Anyway, the point of it is that the alternative that's being presented to people now is so far to the left that a lot of people are saying, I can't let that happen either. And I know this. I talk to a lot of people who are like that, and they say, if we're gonna put up Elizabeth Warren's, somebody wants to do a wealth tax as an example, which is just so off the charts bad, or someone whose, version of math is that, I can do my health plan and I don't have to tax anybody in the middle class, which is complete nonsense. If that's what you're going to give us, if that's the direction you want to take us, then I'll dig in my heels and do what it takes to to hold my nose and cast my vote for Trump, because from a policy standpoint I like him. And I think that's what you run into in many cases, is just people who are saying, I don't like him, but I like the alternative less, because from a policy standpoint, the alternative is worse, and it's long term worse.
But when I ask this, everybody thinks that I'm pushing for people to denigrate Trump. What I'm really saying is, my line in the sand with Hillary, I would never vote. I don't care if she was running against Maddie Webb. No, I like Maddie Webb. After the episode with the
oh, I don't. I you can use the example of me then.
Okay, I mean, I'm saying I would. Everybody says, "Well, you," I've given this guy way more slack than I ever gave her. When the trades were going to her account that weren't hers, she lost me forever. That might in my livelihood. That doesn't happen. Anybody who does that, I got no use for him. I don't care if it's in the next life. I wouldn't vote for her. I mean, the Whitewater stuff. That was before she even decided to run. And I understand she's, probably in terms of background, Secretary of State, Senator, all the other stuff. I don't think there's ever been anybody with had more background. I'm not saying talent. I'll say background, which is a different word. But she lost me. I mean, Trump lost me long before he ever ran.
When I met people here on business practices, yeah. Way before he ever.
Well, ran. I get
what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you at this point that there are a lot of people looking and saying, no, we can't go down that other road either.
Well, I guess my
so maybe we just do this another 4 years. And now, does that mean you're not going to go out and criticize them, that you don't have your line in the sand? I don't know. For a lot of people, yeah, that's exactly what it means. Is okay, I have to defend. I have to dig in.
Well, I guess how far is the party? Is there a line in the sand for the Republicans to say we got to find somebody else? Because I got to believe if they can find somebody else, it can beat Elizabeth Warren. For God's sake, your pet Airedale should beat Elizabeth Warren, right?
You would think so. But history says no. History says,
well, that's kind of my point.
When an incumbent president gets primaried with a significant challenge, he loses.
Well, I guess my point is, does Mitch McConnell, does the guy who couldn't stand Trump and now basically whatever it does to him, do those people have, is there any line he can cross that they're not going to say, and that's enough?
Well, I guess we'll find out over the next month or so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he's there yet. I honestly don't believe this is, all that impeachable, but I haven't heard it all yet either. You know, so we'll see. Kevin, talk to you on Friday, maybe a little bit more about that Memphis story, and we'll see what – we haven't talked about college football, but everybody in the top four are losing all the time now. We'll see what happens this weekend. SP Futures down 10.25, NASDAQ Futures down 33. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. It's Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Russell Rhodes from New York City, live from New York. It's it's Wednesday morning.
Yes.
It's Saturday night.
Yes, and today is National Kindness Day, but I've got a real big bone to pick with you.
Okay. Well,
how dare you talk about the Memphis Wiseman situation without me on the air?
I couldn't.
Well, I am the 13th person in a row in my family to graduate from the University of Memphis.
Can I ask?
I bleed Tiger Blue. I know more about that situation than all the brain power
that's
in that room.
That's why we put it off.
Combined right now.
That's why we put off the real discussion until you came in.
So, how dare you? I heard that at the very end, and I'm like, are you kidding with me?
Have you ever heard of have you ever heard of the high school coach being the AAU coach as well? The guy's like double dipping. I mean, I imagine it's happened. I just never thought it did.
Well, see, here's the thing: is he was he had his AAU program before he became the high school coach. He was actually the high school assistant for a while. So he wasn't the high school coach the whole time he was there. It's like they say he won 3 state championships. I think he was the head coach one of those years. And basically what he did was he took over for a junior high program because one of his mentors passed away, and he basically coached all those kids all the way up through high school. He kind of worked his way up with them.
All right, could you let's back up just a hair.
Sure.
Since most people we talk about on the show once in a while, yet the differences in how these AAU things operate in various parts of the country are like night and day. I mean, in California, my buddy Dave Murphy tells me you can't be in football without being in touch football in the summertime AAU. That's where everybody learns skill positions mm-hmm. and all that good stuff. How does AAU basketball operate in Memphis, and is it different than here? I honestly don't know how it operates. Here, I always thought it was more with girls basketball than boys, Manny, but that's why I'm asking. I don't know. What is the situation?
There's different AAU circuits, even. There's like the Nike one and the Adidas one, and needless to say, because Anthony Hardaway has a lifetime contract with Nike, his team was part of the Nike circuit. But, and it wasn't just players from East High School, which is the school that he was the coach at. He did have players from all over the Memphis area. He just had 2 or 3 of his East High School players on that team.
All right, so give me, if you know, are there, when you say you're part of the AAU, are there 8 AAU teams and there's 7 other Penny Hardaway's recruiting kids from other high schools to play?
Yeah,
there
are a handful. I think there's 3 or 4 in Memphis that I can think of. His team, he handed his team over to somebody else. It used to be Team Penny. Now it's Bluff City Legends. But there's 2 or 3 other guys that run AAU programs as well.
Is the league other cities, or is the league all in Memphis?
They go around in the summertime and play in different tournaments all over the country.
Okay. So there's money behind it.
I think there is probably an economic incentive for most people to put together an AAU team. I don't think that's why Hardaway was doing it.
Well,
he doesn't need the money.
All right,
the other thing is, I think one of the reasons he's standing up to the NCAA now is he doesn't need the money in this situation either.
I'm going to show my age here, but now these kids are playing basketball all summer. They don't have a summer job like I used to have. Now, whether people even have summer jobs mm-hmm. anymore, I have no idea. But is there some compensation, some limit to the compensation?
I don't think so. Other than a whole lot of cool free clothes and a bunch of trips.
So you can't. The kid doesn't get 10 pairs of shoes, 9 of which he can sell.
I don't know about that.
Maybe you have any idea. I mean,
of course, I don't wear size 15 shoes, so I don't. I've never bought a pair off the street. I don't know about that part. But can I give my opinion as somebody that's biased?
Yes, please do.
Yes.
Okay. They broke a rule. They broke the rule, but here's the issue, is the NCAA told him back in the spring that he was cleared, and then they walked it back right as the season was starting. And that, I think that's the issue here, is that he got, you know, an initial, you're all clear to play, and then walking it back at this late date, I think that's the real issue here at this point. I don't know. When I read, and I have dug into this thing, when I read exactly, you know, what had happened, and, you know, by the definition of being a booster, Anthony Hardaway was a booster of the University of Memphis. He gave him $1 million for a really cool Hall of Fame, which I've been to, back, you know, a decade plus ago. And then he gave money to somebody that ultimately was choosing a university, And when he gave money, you know, he gave money to the family to help them move from Nashville to Memphis. He basically wasn't doing so really knowing that he was going to get the job at University of Memphis. In fact, he had just gotten shot down for the job at Memphis. They'd given it to Tubby Smith, and he had really wanted it. So I don't believe the intent was there. And God knows I don't think anybody thought Tubby Smith was only going to last two seasons at Memphis.
Yeah, well,
I don't think the intent was there at the time, but I do, and the Tennessee High School Association actually went after him a little bit on this, and that he was cleared. He ended up getting to play at East High School, even though his coach had helped him move to Memphis.
Well,
go ahead, man. Why did the NCAA backtrack? Was it new people reviewing it, or
that's the part we don't know because of how murky the internal process is there. And I think the process is what the lawyers are going after them on.
Well, they don't have any process.
That it's so arbitrary.
That's what I'm saying. They don't have any process.
And that if this were in, you know, and I'm repeating an argument. I'm not saying this is totally my opinion, but part of the argument is if this were Kansas or Duke or Kentucky, would they be treating the school the same way?
No. We know the answer to that.
And that really is the core of what they're doing here, is they're going after them. And that, with that sort of thing, is there's a very unfair and uneven method with respect to how the NCAA enforces their roles.
Well, the whole concept, let's say, for instance, Stacks and Jacks, one of these days, you know, that we're all Howard Stern's making so much money doing this, I can't imagine that happening, but suppose we did. And Matty Weber says, I've always really wanted to coach basketball. And he tells me about some poor kid who's in God knows where, and his dad's a place, and the factory just left, and the guy's a good worker, and he finds a job here, and they have money for moving expenses. And suppose I say, well, you know what, I'll donate the money. I don't care. I got a guy from Allied Van Lines I used to know. He needs a job. Go get the guy's stuff. I paid the guy $5,000. Matty coaches the kid. He becomes a star. He goes to Notre Dame. The thought that I am somehow a supporter booster of Notre Dame and gave it a rat's behind where the kid, if the kid weren't there or not, it would be insulting to me. Now, of course, Penny seems closer to Memphis than I am to Notre Dame. But still, the idea that just because you're an alumnus, you're an automatic booster, you know what, that blows.
No, that's not, actually, I'm not a booster of the University of Memphis because I had an issue with some things when I went to school there, and it actually had to do with getting a graduate assistantship. They gave it to every graduate assistantship they gave out in the business school, they gave to students from outside the U.S. So to get myself to graduate school, I had to deliver pizza instead of working under a professor. And when I graduate, when I did my oral exams to graduate, they said, do you want to give us any feedback on the university? And I said, yeah. You know, I don't say this in a hostile way, but I'm never going to give you a dime. And I'm not going to give you a dime, and here's why.
You're missing the point.
Because when I needed the help, you didn't give it to me. I'm not giving it back to you. I'm not a booster because I don't give them money.
Are you a graduate of Memphis?
I am, but there's a difference in the definition of a booster and a graduate. A booster gives money.
If all of a sudden some kid comes and applies for you, and you give him a job over the summer, and you find out that the kid's playing football.
I turn into a booster, believe it or not.
That's what I'm saying. Without any, yeah. And I'm saying being
right
an alumnus.
Right now, I'm not a booster because I don't give him money. That's when he gave them cash. He crossed over from being just a graduate to being a booster, part of the definition that they use.
And
it's really for these good old boys that went to Alabama.
Oh, I get it.
That give $50,000 a year. You know, that's really what they were going after.
But if anybody had a problem with it, it should have been the high school. Because that's what he gave it. He gave it so the kid could go to high school, not because he go to Memphis.
And they did have a little bit of a problem with it. But
they did? Okay.
They did the same thing. They basically got an injunction, and he played a year at East High School, and then he moved on in life.
Well, it's a... I don't know.
I think, you know, the positive press that Memphis is getting around it is they're right in this murky, process that two situations can happen in a couple of places, and one place they clear, the other place they don't, that there's not a lot of transparency behind the enforcement process. And the part that really drives me absolutely bonkers is you have coaches that are still around that have done a lot worse things than this.
Well, now
that the people that end up suffering in the whole enforcement process are the NCAA players, not the coaches.
You see a parallel here to the political process, Manny? This is the world now we live in politically, which you and I have discussed. I mean, the forever at Notre Dame, there's been nothing but people. I can name them, hundreds of them. Nobody wants to listen to. And even if the Irish are a little over the edge on a rule, so what? It's not as bad as Alabama. Does that sound like, so what? It's not as bad as Hillary would have done? Right?
I like it.
I mean, is it the same thing? Well, it doesn't matter. We've known forever. I mean, Kevin's been railing on North Carolina. The guy from the played on the Bears. He was in pro ball for 18 years or something. It started when he was there. The summer school.
The fake classes, for lack of a better way to
Julius
put it.
Peppers.
Yeah. And they never did anything in North Carolina. Even though North Carolina told on themselves, for God's sake, they still couldn't do anything because of the strength of the basketball program. People think it's football. Mm-hmm. It's basketball. That's where the money is. The NCAA. They don't get any money off football. Right, man?
Oh, yeah. Well, the conferences make money off football.
Right.
The NCAA makes money off of basketball.
I mean, the chances is one year of them dousing Duke. What did Krzyzewski just get charged with the other day? They're not going to do anything to the Duke program. What was his deal this weekend? It was something I just saw a flash go by the TV that he was charged on one count of a recruiting violation or something. I don't know if we have to dig that out. But
I know there was something small recently. But the
idea,
you know, you had,
well, it's such a cesspool that everybody is convinced that no matter how bad my school is, the other school is worse. And to a large extent, they might be right. I mean, right? I mean, you can't tell me that the economics of this... Well, how much money... Well, now we're picking on Memphis. How much money, other than everybody in the, and especially in the South, I'll say Memphis in the South, has to have a good basketball program for some reason. How much money is basketball worth to Memphis? It can't be that much.
To the university?
Yeah.
Oh, the basketball program carries it. It's one of the few places where the basketball program actually carries the university more than the football program.
Okay, well, I would agree with that.
Although the football program in the last 4 or 5 years has turned that around. But historically, I mean, 10 years ago, we were talking about dumping football.
Okay.
Because it was a money loser. The only thing, so really, the basketball program is the thing that funds the department.
But it's
so
not,
it's a very big deal.
But it's not $100 million or $300 million.
No. Memphis, because they're a second-tier school, it's not nearly, you know, to that level. But it is the program that has historically carried the university. Actually, it's why Tubby Smith got let go, because he wasn't doing anything to get people to come to the games. He was just coaching the basketball team, and they're like, here, we need more than that. And that's why that really is the main reason he got let go.
Well, because I honestly don't, what do you think at the end of the day, Manny, the Irish program's worth?
I mean, basketball fund?
Yeah, you know, I mean, but if you go two or three deep into the NCAA, now you get that money for the next decade, so that helps some. You know, you're going to get the conference money for the NCAA, so you're going to get that money if you're in a conference where a lot of people go.
Do they share in the ACC money for the conference?
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
that's how the NCAA works, man. If you for every game you play, you get like $200,000 for the next 5 years or some number. And Kevin, is it 5 years or 7 years or something? It's basically like $1 million a game that you did for you appear in the NCAA.
There's a revenue stream that gets split between the university and the conference,
right?
And it is stretched out over time. NCAA gets the money now; you get the money later.
But I mean, if you do the math and say, okay, the place holds 10,000, their average is probably 5 because they got all the teams like last night, because they don't fill up. And the tickets, you know, 50 million. But I mean, if you do the numbers for football, You're looking at 80,000 people, 150 a ticket. I mean, the math gets extraordinary pretty quick. But I don't.
Oh, and they get to keep all the bowl money.
They don't have to split
it up with anybody else. It's huge.
Yeah, but you know they don't get as much because of that.
Okay.
There's some story with that. But
what
I'm saying is, you and I could sit here, you know, on a day you're in the office and on the whiteboard here, we probably could estimate Texas football pretty quick. I mean, I honestly don't know. I'm saying in a good year, basketball is worth $2 million in Notre Dame? Three? One? It's not 20.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Most schools, it's football. Memphis is an anomaly. And it's probably equal at this point, but basketball is much more important to the University of Memphis than any other school with a football.
Manny will come back with a report, and it'll be a good one.
I'll find what Notre Dame and Memphis are worth. I can tell you neither of them are in the top 20 most profitable college basketball programs. Can you guess who number one is?
I'm going to say North Carolina.
No, they're number 11.
Really?
Yes.
KY.
They're number two. But there's another school in that same state that's number one.
Louisville.
Yes, Louisville.
I can see that.
Louisville and Kentucky are 1 and 2, and they're far and away more than anyone else. Number 3 is Indiana still, surprisingly. Number 4 is Duke, 5 Kansas, 6 Ohio State, 7 Syracuse, 8 Arizona, 9 Illinois. In spite of Illinois not being very good, they're still rake a ton of money.
Does it all come down to the size of the stadium, or what?
That's
does it come
a big
down?
Part of it, yeah. I would assume so,
yeah.
This is based on revenue brought in.
What's the time period on that one? Because Memphis dipped and they basically doubled their attendance last year.
This is the 2019 Forbes list based off the last 3 years.
Okay. So what are the numbers?
Yeah, two of those 3 years Memphis was in the red for the first time in a long time in the basketball. But I think that list 2 years from now, as long as they don't get the death penalty.
Yeah.
they'll probably jump back.
I bet when Calipari was there, I bet Memphis was in the top 3 or 4.
Oh, no, they were. Yeah.
All right. Well, is it you know, I'm a knucklehead detail guy. Kentucky holds 20,000. There's 15,000 students show up, 12,000. They're $20 a ticket, and the rest of the people are 100. I mean, how does the math even work?
I think you just described it.
Okay, well, so how much?
Rupp Arena holds 24,480 people.
What are they saying Kentucky makes in a year?
Well, it's based off the last 3 years. That's what this has been. And Kentucky in revenue is $49.4 million in the last 3 years for just basketball.
And, okay, then the expenses?
And their average profit is $22.9
million. Really?
Yes.
And
that's second behind Louisville. Louisville's average profit is $30.4 million. Their revenue is 52.
Does Louisville play like in a downtown stadium? They must.
Louisville plays in a big stadium as well.
Yeah, they have a relatively new arena. I do know that.
Okay, well, that's pretty good.
Louisville's arena holds 23,000, so a little smaller than Kentucky's, but still very big.
Well, how far does it drop off? What's like the number 11 team? What are they making?
The number 11 team is North Carolina. They're making $24.8 million.
They're
not making it. Their revenue is 24.8. Their profit is 14.
Okay.
So believe it or not, they're behind Wisconsin. They're behind Illinois. They're behind Ohio State. They're behind Indiana.
Well, how could they be behind Wisconsin? It must have to do with how many students go versus other people.
And just ticket cost, all that. Wisconsin, $25.5 million in revenue, $14.6 million in profit. Wisconsin's got a decent-sized arena, too, Kohl Center.
Well, Kohl Center
holds 17,200.
But what do you do if 15,000 students show up? How much can you charge them?
When would 15,000?
You don't give them all tickets.
Yeah, when would 15,000 students show up? That'd be
yeah. And beyond that, I know because I lived in Lawrence, Kansas for a year that basically there are a limited number of student seats, and that was it. That was after that. And they'd camp out 2 or 3 days in advance just to get a seat.
Really?
That's same with Duke, and Duke's arena is so small. Yeah, Kansas's arena is small for one thing, 16,000.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's still not small, but it's smaller than.
But it's interesting looking if you've ever been there. It's it goes straight up.
Allen Fieldhouse. Yeah, I would love to go to a game there.
What's the Irish? 10?
Look.
It can't be more than 10. It's not even 10, I don't think. Well, I mean,
I also believe revenue wise that you get a ticket split when you're on the road, and that probably helps schools like Kentucky an awful lot because you know their first game of the year they probably got a lot of money playing Michigan State here in New York.
Oh yeah,
probably
the Joyce. You know,
whereas Memphis started out against I think South Carolina State.
The Joyce Center, the Notre Dame
There's
Arena.
There's still a lot of people there because they're all excited. But
seats 91.49.
Yeah, too. I mean they're. You know, reason why I asked, man,
it's like a third of the size of Rupp Arena.
Yeah, but like Ohio State, there's 45,000 students go there.
So right, but they don't go to the basketball game.
Not even if
they
a
limit
quarter?
The. They limit the.
Oh, they limit.
Yes, that's what we just said.
Every place they limit it.
I think almost not every place. Some places are dying to get any students to go. But the big time powerhouse programs, they limit the student section.
Oh, all right, okay.
Because they want.
Why you go there?
Yeah, they want to make money, and that's why.
Well, no, I mean that's why a lot. There are a handful of more than a handful. There are students. The only reason they end up going to certain universities is because they, you know, they're a lifelong Duke basketball fan.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
no different than people that go for football programs and anything else.
Well, we never had any problem getting a ticket.
Football for Notre Dame, and if they can get in.
We always bought tickets. I mean, every year, and my whole gang, we had hockey and basketball. Yeah. Well, I guess we were odd. Of course, what else are you doing South Bend on a Tuesday night?
I'd go to games.
What is your? We'll kind of shift gears on you a little bit here, Russell. What's your buddy Paul's going to say today and tomorrow?
I have no clue. I can tell you the market thinks he's going to say we are very happy with where we're at. We're not going to be doing anything for the foreseeable future.
Okay. That's a fat lie. Not on you, but
I'm just telling you. The question you asked was, what's he going to say? Well, and I'm going to remind you that today is National Kindness Day with a hashtag.
Okay. All right, my question.
Talking you down, I'm sorry.
I know my question to you, Mr. Professional Maven, Professor Maven. My brother Dan did some research. They have done, and I went back and, of course, checked everything. They are almost doing double the amount of balance sheet expansion as they did do QE2 or QE3. Is anybody going to ask him that question? What the bleep are you doing?
Maybe.
It's absolutely
totally maybe.
It's absolute panic mode. It's absolute panic mode. It's worse than the QE.
It's propping up mode.
What are we? Okay.
Is the economy like Bernie and Weekend at Bernie's and Powell has cloned himself and they're carrying it around?
I mean, the numbers are spectacular. It's not just we had a repo problem 3 weeks ago.
Yeah,
it's way more than that. $92 billion this month. QE was 40. QE3.
Yeah. No, it goes beyond trying to take care of the repo problem as well. But I don't think anybody's going to grill him on it.
What do you think it is? Is it something we should be worried about?
Yes.
Do you have a clue? Do you have a clue what it could be?
You and I could have a very similar conversation 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 6 years ago.
No, when they did QE, everybody agreed at least there was a problem and said, hey, this is the problem.
Oh, you think that they're not acknowledging the problem now?
What is the problem? I don't have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, why do they need $90 billion last month in the system? Is some bank that nobody wants a loan to them? Is it
That is extremely possible.
Is it?
And that was the early signs of what happened in 2008.
Is it possible, Russell, we only got 30 seconds here. Is it possible?
I know.
It could be, we'll talk more about it at the break. Just lob this one out there. Is it possible that they're having some problems on the dollar-denominated Chinese loans?
Ooh.
I heard that those are starting to have an issue.
I hadn't tied that together, but that is a really good thought because I do think that China will be a contributor to whatever the next big problem is going to be.
All right, chewing that. S&P futures down 10. NASDAQ futures down 31. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Russell Rhodes on the phone from New York City. New York, New York. Are you doing Saturday Night Live? He's doing a financial segment out there, I hear.
I'm here doing things from right when we get off the phone until about 6:30, and then I'm flying home.
Good for you, first class. I assume we're private.
I do fly first class.
Okay, I knew that. SP Futures down
850. I don't drink. I don't gamble. I don't do anything else. I pay for my own upgrades because I do too much time on those things.
Ah, SP Futures down 26. Dow Futures down 91. So we're doing better than we were earlier. We're down 12 last time we went through this. DAX down 74.6%. FTSE down 24.3%. CAC around down 15.2%. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 200, it's 0.8%. Shanghai down 9%.
I'm going to take care of recording the business.
Yes.
Right.
Hang Seng down 493, 1.8. So Hang Seng is in a rough week. Bonds come back the other way a little bit. 1.87, we were 1.94 yesterday. The Bund, 0.29, it was down to 0.25, I believe, yesterday. Japan, however, still minus 0.04, I think heading toward above zero, we'll see, or above water. Silver up 21 cents now, 16.41. Gold up $10, 10.20. Copper, 2.64. We've got oil down 28 cents, 56.52. Brent down 48, 61.58. Maddie, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Off to a great start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No significant issues to report coming in on the Edens or Kennedy, though traffic starting to build due to normal traffic volumes on a Wednesday morning. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Dan Ryan, I-57, and Bishop Ford, the same. No accidents or issues to report. Normal traffic volumes, no significant issues. So that's all good news. Only crash on the screen right now is in the northern burbs. Waukegan Road, which is Route 43 south at Route 176, we have a crash. But everything else is looking good out there. Actually, one crash just came up. The Tri-State northbound, just before the Stevenson, there was a crash blocking the left lane. That's on the I-294 Tri-State, so keep that in mind. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, another miserable day, but we're used to that. Overcast skies, a high of 30, wind chills in the single digits. A little warmer than yesterday, but not much. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 16 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 80 today. Right now it's clear and 58. In sports, Bulls back on track, blowing out the Knicks last night at the UC 120-102. Suns held on to beat the Lakers, or actually the Lakers held on to beat the Suns in Phoenix, 123-115. Blackhawks were off. They're at Vegas tonight, 9 p.m. puck drop. Coyotes topped the Blues 3-2. College hoops, Notre Dame had no problem with Howard. 79-50 was the blowout win in that one. Loyola lost at home to Coppin State, 76-72.
Chief. What's your... After going into Thursday Night Football tomorrow, we got a couple of minutes before we dig back into this Chinese stuff, because I'm reading the articles here, and it's not anything anybody wants to hear. So we'll put it off for football for a little bit. Who's your power rankings now? Who's your power rankings now?
Who's my power rankings?
Who are the best teams?
In the NFL, the best teams. I still believe that the Patriots are the best team, even though they got blown out last time they played. But I need to see, you know, a consistent downfall. I think the Ravens you'd have to put in the top five.
Guys, I got those guys as my up-and-comers.
They look great. The 49ers, even though they lost, they're still very good. The Seahawks are 8-2. They're very good. That's probably my top five in no particular order.
2 weeks ago, they had the Saints as number one. I'm going to say I don't have them there anymore.
No, the Saints, that was a perplexing loss at home to the Falcons, who were one of the worst teams in the NFL. And they were dominated in that game. And the Saints were full strength. They got Breeze back. They got Kamara back. And they just couldn't do anything on offense. I do think they'll bounce back. I think they're too talented. They have a really good coach. But that was a weird one. And, you know, they're still in the top 10 for sure. And you could argue they're in the top 5, but I'd probably have them at 6 or 7.
Is it possible to have there's only one team that's ever done it. Is it possible to go 16 games without a clunk? When you got injuries,
no, definitely not. You always have it. Seemingly in the NFL, the Packers, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago, they went to the Chargers and got beat, and no one saw that coming. You always have a clunker. The Bears have had a couple, unfortunately, this year. The Cowboys had the clunker where they lost to the Jets, and I think they're better than that. By the way, we didn't even mention the Packers or Vikings, and they're pretty good too. They're definitely in the top 10, maybe not top 5. But yeah, those are the teams. The Bears are right around the mediocre mark. They're probably the 15th or 20th best team right now, and that's disappointing considering we all kind of thought they'd be a top 10 team. But that's where it's at.
I think Oakland is doing better than I thought they would, and they got two number one picks next year. So,
well, Oakland,
their future looks bright.
Their rookie running back is on pace to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. The guy's unbelievable. Jacobs out of Alabama.
Yeah.
And they just pound the ball. They have a really good offensive line. They have a really good running back. And they just pound the ball and then just run play action, and that's been enough for them to win. And they're off to a pretty good start.
Well, one of my favorite dudes on that does football color coverage is Tom Thayer. And somehow, Manny, it seems like you get in love with your – I heard him in the preseason, and he goes, this is the first time he's ever seen a Bear team with so much talent that the guys that they were going to cut were going to be starters other places. And I haven't seen – Now, granted, if you were to say, if you were to ask me, do three people, well, I guess you put Khalil Mack in there, but the three people you least likely want to take off the team, it would have been Hicks, Kyle Long, a healthy Kyle Long, and Danny Trevathan, and those are the three that are missing. So that's a blow for anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Those guys are all very important. I think Hicks is the most important of those three.
And all of a sudden now you've got some offensive line problems, and the people you thought were getting better and were real good and gave pretty big contracts to now appear to be just average. The tackles and other people without Kyle Long.
Think the offensive line has been better the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
They're starting to, maybe form some continuity.
The new right guard isn't bad.
They're running the ball a little better, which is good. But the first, several weeks of the season, they were just terrible. The defense has not been the same at all since Hicks went down. They don't get pressure on the quarterback at all, even with Khalil Mack.
Right.
So and Leonard Floyd. I mean, they don't touch the
quarterback.
Leonard
Floyd this is supposed to be his breakout year. He disappeared. Yeah.
I went to the game on Sunday. They had one sack, and it was a backup defensive tackle that came in and got a sack. It was not one of the Khalil Mack and star guys. So I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah. Hello. Well, I'm going to go back to railing on Trump a little bit, if you don't mind. Russell, my concern gets to be, and these are big deals, right? When I say railing on Trump and his people, it's, if you would ask me, my big concern about the dude is that I don't think he thinks these issues through deep enough, and these issues are way more complicated than they were when you and I were growing up. And I remember, Milton Friedman answering a question from class. I still remember this kind of crap, believe it or not. Somebody said, what is your problem with, do you have a problem with national debt? His answer was, I actually don't. It's because it's an asset on the citizen's balance sheet, and it's a liability on the country's balance sheet. What's the difference? It's like looking at the Rhodes house and saying, well, the wife owes you $25,000, so what? It's an asset on your balance sheet, it's a liability on hers, but the Rhodes house is still fine. But things have changed. And the debt now is, at one point, was over 50% owned by other people, right? So if he was alive today, he wouldn't answer that question the same way. Now we have a president who, in my mind, is very narrow-minded and he's too old. And he doesn't seem to think that there's new stuff. You can't take a country like China and drive them into the ground, as much as I can't stand what they've done, and I don't really like the way they do business. When you look at these things about the trillions of dollars that people in the U.S. have loaned them money, they were up to $1.3 trillion in dollar-denominated Chinese debt. And when you force them into some sort of a problem, all those interest rates, if their wine goes down, those interest rates go up by the same amount that the wine goes down, right? At the same time, you're putting the country into a problem. So you're gonna beat up on China. But I keep one of the most amazing scenes that I remember in Hunt for Red October, where the guy shoots the torpedo and his guy goes, "You arrogant ass, you've killed us." When the torpedo turned around and hit right back at the Soviet boat. And I wonder if the stuff Trump's doing here, is he killing us? Or is he killing them? Or both? For him not to know that if China goes into a bleep hole, that the amount of debt that they've got out in dollar, or do we not care about dollar-denominated debt, and do they not care? It didn't go through their system. Maybe they shouldn't care in their mind. Does anybody care about that?
Maybe they think it's just going to hit us.
Think it's just going to hit us. And we think it's just going to hit them. And I think, guess what? Both sides, I think you're wrong. I don't think that can happen. Just the other guy gets hurt. Do you?
No, I don't think that can just happen. I think both sides can quite easily get hurt. You can go all the way back to World War II, where things were intertwined, and the Wall Street crash turned right around and basically put Germany in such a hole, they turned into what they turned into over the 30s.
Right.
Yeah. So you say that it's more complex than it used to be. Actually, I think it's always, at least for the last 100 years or so, it's always been like this. The numbers are just much bigger.
Well, you've had.
So what happened? Okay, let's politically. What happens to China if this experiment, and they can blame what may end up happening on this experiment with capitalism. Do they turn into a really nasty militaristic state and become our enemy on the surface as opposed to just our kind of, you know, pseudo frenemy?
Well,
and long term, does that is that the direction that we go with all this?
Can I go back a second to what you said about
sure.
the World War II part? And by the way, I think you're spot on with that. But whenever you get something unusual, and the unusual part after the World War II thing was the World War I reparations, the idea that
exactly
that Germany was paying France and Britain money they basically didn't have. They were turning around and giving it to us because of the World War I debt, and Germany was selling securities in this country in dollars to start the whole process. So a lot of that money actually came out of the American people's pocket, which is a bizarre world. It's nothing Milton Friedman or anybody would ever imagine, right? Now, in this day and age, 15, 20 years ago, would you ever have imagined that if you wanted to lend money to China, you know, the Russell Rhodes Inc., you would have essentially brought money to the Chinese central bank or someplace, change it into the yuan, correct? You know, they don't let people do that. But if they were a regular country and did things correctly, like if you want to loan money to, you know, Matt Weber in London, you're going to either do it here or do it there. You're going to change your dollars into pounds, and you're going to lend Matt Weber the money in pounds because that way he can use it, correct? Now, Matt Weber,
exactly.
when he comes to pay you back, has currency risk. Because unless you're willing to say, Matt, I'm lending you, everybody needs to listen to this a little bit. If I say to you, I'm lending you 100 grand, turning it into pounds, giving you whatever, how many pounds that gives you. Now, I say 5 years from now, Matty, you owe me 100 grand. Now, the currency risk is on Matty Weber. If all of a sudden the pound drops by, say, a half, he needs twice as many pounds now to give me back my 100 grand, correct? Now, that's probably not going to happen by a half.
Exactly.
But I mean, if I were to say, yeah. I'll tell you what, I'll lend you 100,000 pounds, I go down to Harris Bank or whatever much money I need to get the 100,000 pounds, and I give you a stack of pound notes, I'm taking the currency risk, correct? Because now all you have to do
exactly.
is pay me back the pounds, which is a lot easier for you because you're operating in England and you don't have to worry about the currency fluctuations. And it's my bad luck if 5 years from now, here's your pounds back, and I go, yeah, but they're only worth 90 grand now, not 100. That kind of sucks. Well, so what? It sucks for you. That means see ya. You know, right? So you got to be careful how you do this, correct? I mean, none of this stuff
exactly.
does anybody talk about. I mean, you do in your classes. But it's not obvious to somebody who doesn't do this, right?
I try to, but I get a lot of blank stares when I get too deep into it. So I try to walk it back a little bit, especially with the freshmen and sophomores.
Do the guys who've traveled around the world, I mean,
what you just described with respect to the World War II thing and where we are right now is kind of how we got there, but we're really in the same circular situation.
Right, right.
And I think there's this high level belief that is if everybody gets so intertwined that they'll never fight.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that was part of the idea behind the whole EU thing. Was if we're all tied together like this, we're never going to fight again.
Huh. Well, it works. it works for people like the Canadians because they're like you are anyway, right?
Yeah, yeah, but. So, yeah, I don't know if we're making the potential situation between the Chinese worse and us worse or not. I think time will tell on that one. Because one of two things can happen long term. We keep going down the path that we're going, and they basically outright own us.
Well, you know? That's a possibility.
So how do you go about switching that one around? You're not going to get people to stop buying the cheap stuff at Walmart, which turns around and funds everything doing. So
it's because people here don't have any. There's a lot of wealth. Wealth is at all time levels. So when I say something like this, I know I'm going against the quote grain. But the mm-hmm. when you drop below the top 10%, the reason why people buy the crap, well, it's not crap, they buy the stuff at Walmart is because they can't afford the stuff at Fields. If Fields was still around, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it's, there's no doubt about that. I mean, I shop at the Duluth Trading, and they've got all kinds of blue jeans and stuff, and they used to have American-made blue jeans when I started shopping there, you know, 8-10 years ago. And they were, rest of the blue jeans are, you know, whatever, $50, and they were 85. They're not in the catalog anymore. No, nobody bought them. I don't know if they're any good or not, but
too expensive.
Yeah, just, well, I don't care. I mean, I would rather that the ones that I'm buying are made here, but there's no way I'm paying up $20 for the same thing in my mind. You know, if it's you and me, and one's going to last 5 years versus three, you know, we might go for it. But if you're buying it for kids, and they're going to come home torn every day anyway, you're going to say they only last, you know,
and
six months. Yeah.
Kids grow.
Yeah.
On tour, they grow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so yeah, it's, I mean, what, I mean, when I first went to Old Navy, I bought some stuff there. I did store just open. I'm like, this stuff mm-hmm. is crap. You know, I don't want this stuff. But by the same token, if I had five kids out playing football and the stuff after school, would I care? It's torn mm-hmm. up anyway, right? So, I mean, it's, I know Audrey and her pals will go to Walmart or someplace and they'll buy like these outdoor lights. You know, man, the light went out, you know, how can I? I said, no, you can't replace the bulb. You can't replace the battery. That's why you paid 48 cents for the thing. But what do you mean? You know, I mean, if you want to buy a decent bulb, a decent light that is built the last 15 years, you're not going to get it for 38 cents. Yeah, why should I pay $5 for mm-hmm. the same thing that's 40 cents? It's not the same thing. That's what I'm trying to tell you. The other one, if you want me to replace the bulb, I can replace it. This one, the thing doesn't even come out. You're supposed to go buy a new one. Why would I have to buy a new one after 6 months? Duh. You know, you're like, I mean, there is a question of the quality, and but when people, there's some, I mean, if you're going to buy, I don't do decorations, but if all of a sudden I got talked into doing them for like one party, because you know, Audrey's talking to Jill and they decide we can't have a party, and Maddie and I reluctantly go out and buy some stuff. I guarantee it'll be the cheapest thing I can find because I can't wait to throw it out the same day, right? Am I right? Anyway, we don't want those stinking
you're
generous decorations.
You're just not living up to National Kindness Day.
No, I'm just not, obviously. But well, I guess what I'm saying is when you do these kinds of things and you start these battles, you have to realize that sometimes you're hurting people on your side, too. Now, at the end of the day, I don't know if anybody really is capable of saying who gets hurt the worst. I mean,
that's true. It's, you know, if you know, back at, this is probably a terrible analogy, but you know, back in the day when I was growing up, we almost felt like at some point we were going to have a nuclear war with the Soviet Union. It just felt like that. And who ends up better, the one who has two cities left standing or the one that has three cities left standing?
Well, yeah.
You know,
you ever watch
it? It was,
you ever watch
mutual
NCAA?
Assured messiness.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
You ever watch NCIS? Where? Yeah. You know, one of the guys asked Gibbs, he goes, have you ever lost a fight? And he goes, I never felt like I won one.
Yeah.
You know, but by the way, I have a question. Now, in Memphis, since you guys are so different down there.
Yes, we are.
When you did your air raid drills, where did they put you?
We had a basement at my school.
Okay.
So we went to the subterranean part. Did you just get under the desk?
No, we went out on an interior wall, very much like a tornado drill.
Okay.
And you put your head between your legs and kissed your ass goodbye, remember?
Yeah, yep.
We actually
had a real emergency. There was a really nasty gas leak, and they put us all as far into the interior of the grade school as they possibly could.
Did you have actual fallout shelters?
Yeah, we did.
Did you have a... Matty, did you ever see one of those?
A fallout shelter.
Did you ever see one of the signs?
I know I've seen the signs. I think I've actually seen one too, but we never did drills like that. Ours were just standard, like tornado.
Well, I don't think our school was one, but all the public schools were. The subways were fallout shelters. But in every one, there would be a fallout shelter, maximum capacity, 100 people. And when I was at the schools, I was key personnel, of course. I had a big, huge... First thing they do when you're a janitor You get this huge honking thing with like 100 keys on there. You have no idea where any of them go, right? But that was your the first 3 days you figured out where the keys were. Well, I had the key to the fallout shelter room, so I say, I'm going to go and check this out. I went in, it was unbelievable. Just like you would expect in the 50s. It was 60 people, 60 cots, 60 blankets, probably, that was 2 weeks, right, where the fallout was supposed to last?
Yeah.
So it was like,
then
it was
you'd
like,
be okay.
It was like a gallon of water per day per person, so there'd be 60 times 14 days worth of water per person. Well, 60 people times the amount of days. Then there were wafers, first aid kits. I mean, they were absolutely totally stacked. I wonder what happened to all that stuff. I mean, they're not around anymore. Somebody's got it or threw it out or did something with it. Because, I mean,
to a soup kitchen type place or something like that.
Maybe. But, I mean, the cots and everything. But now, but I mean, at least when they did it, whether it made sense or not, at least the people spent the money for the stuff they tried to do. I mean, how many years after 9/11? I don't know if Chicago has any capability of moving 50 to 100,000 people to a different place and keeping them for 2 weeks, do you? Where'd all that money go?
Oh, gosh, no.
I don't know of any way to, if there's a dirty bomb in Chicago and half a million people have to leave, it's not like there's a plan to get everybody out of here on rail or cars or whatever, a place you go and you don't have a car and get on a bus or rent tools.
Well, you remember when we had the flood?
The flood inside the city, yeah.
Yeah, remember that? They just turned on all the L's and said and opened up the turnstiles and said, "Get out of here."
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what I recall, because I had actually never taken the elevated part of the loop. I'd already taken the Red Line subway.
Well, you're kind of 1%er guy.
That got flooded.
So. Yeah, that got flooded.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not so sure so, did it. Did
that
it?
Was that was their plan. That was it. It was like, get out of here.
Yeah, well, so. It was another fine. The guy saw the leak, mm-hmm. and it was leaking for, what, 3-4 months while the work order sat on somebody's desk before it gave way?
Yep.
Our bureaucracy at work?
Oh, the best part was when they threw all the mattresses in the river to see if it would clog the hole.
Yeah, it was special.
Let's just say they didn't have a plan for that.
Well, plus they had everybody pumping. when the leak was still going, all you did was draw more water in. Anyway,
so I think that affirms our thinking that they don't have a plan.
No, there's no. Where are we right now? The situation is, if you're managing money for people like I am, you see the market going up, you want to participate. So you got to stay somewhat long. You got to stay somewhat protected because that's what people want me to do. Now the protection is costing you a little bit. So there's no way on earth if the market goes up 10% in the next month that I'm going to make 10% because I'm dragging. You know, I mean, it's just like buying car insurance. I got to pay for it. Now if I am a genius and sell the right calls, I pay for some of it, which I've been doing pretty good at. But even so. You know, but now we've got this thing where everybody's talking about us going like way even higher. We've got the Fed doing whatever this mess is they're doing, and you have to be somewhat, I don't know, giggly to think that they're not solving some kind of problem somewhere. That it's not just to blow the market up higher, right? At those kinds of numbers. It can't be. So there must be something that maybe will be fixed this week, maybe next week, and we'll never even know about it. You know, and everybody will say, why are we even nervous about it? I'll let your guys take care of it. There's political issues. I don't know if I've seen a time quite like this. Russell, have you? I mean, there's always been crazy times, but it's kind of coming at us from every corner right now.
It is, and you're just waiting to see what the, what it is that's going to bust everything.
Or hopefully not. Hopefully we just start to grow a little better. And,
eventually it catches up with us. It's not a matter of if, it's a when. And I think the when continues to be pushed out.
Well, I mean, you would hope that if you and I dropped, you know, or somebody dropped us in the God seat tomorrow, which God I wouldn't want to be in, what you'd play for is you'd play for the markets and everything be steady for 2-3 years and have the economy grow into it. I mean, that's what you'd like to have happen.
That it's one or the other. Either the economy catches up or the stock market drops down to where we're at. But we're way ahead of the economy right now.
We're how much
dead
do you
on
think?
There.
How much do you think? 10%, 15, 20, or don't say like 50.
I'd start buying. I'm all cash right now. I'd start buying at 15% down.
All right, good for you. All cash. Is this $100 bills or 50s?
$100 bills.
All right,
and some gold.
I can see you with a big bar of gold. Take care, buddy. See you in the studio next
all
week.
All right, man.
SP futures down 8.50, and SP futures down 24. Back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-49.